Hello, everybody, and welcome into the Star Wars Legends Lounge, the show that celebrates the books from Star Wars Legends. I'm Aaron Motes. We're halfway through the month of January. I hope the new year has started off well for everyone. My 2023 is going pretty strong so far. Things are looking pretty good at work. Baseball's spring training starts in a month. The Orioles' spring training starts on my birthday, in fact. That's something I'm really looking forward to. And this podcast just keeps rolling along. Downloads seem to be increasing. I'm getting messages from new listeners every day, getting more emails. The show's Twitter page is getting some more followers too. It's really exciting. Now, I don't like making New Year's resolutions, but I am this year. I really have to increase my presence on the Star Wars Legends Lounge Twitter page. Normally, I'm only on there two or three times in between episodes. I'm going to try to at least double that this year, maybe two to three times a week, because I want to keep growing this show. You know, I want to make this as big as possible. Hopefully, I can stick to it. But for me, that's something on the peripheral. The most important thing, of course, is today's episode. It's The Truce Epicura by Kathy Tyers. Immediately following the Rebels' victory at Endor, a strange alien race attacks at the distant Imperial world of Bakura. Luke and Leia lead a small group of Rebels to offer aid, but the Imperial governor is wary. He needs the help, but will he accept it from the enemy? Well, we'll find out coming up in a few minutes. But first, it's listener question time. I have two questions today. The first email comes from listener Dax. Dax says, Spotify recommended the show, and I have binged the whole thing in 2 weeks. I love what you're doing. My heart has a place for all of these legend stories, no matter how amazing, dark, weird, or wacky they get. My question for you, what is your favorite alien species from Star Wars, either legends or canon? Mine would be the Trandoshans, due to how much I loved Bosk growing up, and seeing their culture and their rivalry with the Wookiees in the Clone Wars animated show. I look forward to hearing from you, especially the New Jedi Order series. I've never read these books, but they've always piqued my interest. Well, thank you very much for the kind words, Dax. I've got some plans for the New Jedi Order series. I'm trying to put together a rotating group of guests, some that have read the series before and a few who haven't. With the New Jedi Order being 19 books, I think it'll be a lot more interesting hearing some different opinions on the series instead of just mine. Now, I'm still trying to finalize things, but I am really excited. Hopefully, we set up something cool that all of you will enjoy listening to. Now, back to Dax's question. My favorite alien species. I would say it's the Bith. And no real reason, except that I think they look cool. And I've always had a fascination with the Cantina Band in A New Hope, Figrin Dan and the Modal Nodes. And I don't really know why. They're just pink-colored beings with huge heads, big black eyes, and some skin flaps that kind of look like gills on the side. But I want more with the Bith. Is Darth Tenebris a Bith in canon like he was in Legends? And what happened to Figrin Dan? There are a few stories in Legends about the band, and they're fine, but there's not much in canon, and I want it. Does anyone remember the old VH1 series Behind the Music? Give me a Behind the Music on Figrin Dan and the Modal Nodes. Make it a 30-minute standalone and put it on Disney Plus on the page with Star Wars biomes. You know, hide it there. No one really needs to find it, but it's there if you want to see it. Make it a spoof with a mix of Star Wars characters and real-life musicians. Dave Matthews and Alanis Morissette waxing lyrically about the band's influence on their musical careers. Alice Cooper talking about how Figrin Dan was an out-of-control partier back in the late 70s. And Max Rebo and Droopy McCool explaining the band's fall from grace. I might be the only person that watches that, but oh my goodness, I'd love it. Great question, Dax. Let me open that up to all listeners. Please, tell me what your favorite alien species is and why. Is it because you're interested in a species' entire history and culture like Dax is? Or are you like me? Do you just have an affinity for the species because of one or two characters? Send me an email or a tweet. I'll read it out on the show. Thank you very much for the email, Dax. Today's second message comes from Landon. Landon says, one of my favorite scenes in A New Hope is when the snake monster with one eye grabs Luke and tries to drown slash eat him. What is that monster called? Do you have any theories on how it got into the Death Star? Is there some sort of water system in it that it can move around in? Well, thank you very much for the question, Landon. The creature is called a Dianoga. Now, I always figured it just got in the Death Star's garbage compactor because an Imperial probably bought a baby Dianoga when it was on shore leave. Thought it would be a cool pet to raise, but as it kept growing, they realized they couldn't handle it anymore and just threw the Dianoga down the trash chute. But to get the real story, I checked out the canon Dianoga page on Wikipedia. It says the Dianogas live on the planet Vondren, and one got in the trash compactor because, quote, a group of Vondrens gave the Dianoga to some Imperials that had stopped on the planet on their way to the Death Star. When the Imperials arrived on the battle station, they dumped the Dianoga into the garbage masher, unquote. You know, it's pretty sad, actually. I bet the Dianoga would have preferred to just stay in the swamps of Vondren. Same with the Dianoga that was in the junkyard on the planet Bracca, shown in the first season of The Bad Batch. You know, leave the Dianogas alone, Star Wars. Let them just live their lives in their swamps, eating Star Wars frogs and lizards and whatnot. Well, thank you very much for the question, Landon. Now, listener, if you want to be really cool, like Dax and Landon, feel free to contact the show. Just send me an email, swlegendslounge@gmail.com, or you can send me a tweet, @LegendsLounge1. And if you'd like to get your voice on the show, just record a short message and email it in. But please, record it in MP3 or MP4 audio format. Now it's time for today's book, The Truce at Bakura, by Kathy Tyers. Grab yourself a drink. Let's head in to the Star Wars Legends Lounge. The story begins immediately following the destruction of the second Death Star. Luke Skywalker is recovering from his injuries sustained when the Emperor fried him with darkside lightning, while Han and Leia try to find some time for themselves on Endor. The Rebel Alliance is making plans to pursue the retreating Imperial remnant when a message drone arrives in the system. It's a distress call from a faraway planet called Bakura, an unimportant planet on the edge of Imperial space. The message is from the system's governor, Wylik Nereus. He says Bakura is under attack from a group of mysterious aliens called the Syruk, and he requests military aid. But with the Emperor gone and the Imperial Navy scattered, there's no one left from the Empire to send him help. Luke and Leia say the Alliance should help Bakura. They say with the Emperor and Darth Vader gone, the Alliance needs to start uniting the galaxy, and this could be a start. Alliance leadership agrees. They give Luke command of a small rebel battle group to help defend the planet, while Leia receives diplomatic orders to negotiate with Governor Nereus to try to bring Bakura into the Rebel Alliance. When our team arrives in the system, they find Bakura under attack from three Syruvi battlecruisers, a number of picket ships, and hundreds of small fighters. The Imperial defense is led by Commander Petir Thanis. Luke hails Thanis and offers to help repel the aliens. Thanis is skeptical, of course, but with his forces getting overrun, he eventually agrees. Luke deploys his forces, surprising the Syruk. During the battle, Luke senses some weird feelings coming from the fighters. They feel human, but the feeling is sick, It's twisted. The Cyrook retreat to the edge of the system to regroup, while Luke, Leia, and Han head down to the planet to meet with Governor Nereus. Nereus invites the rebels to address the Bakuran Senate, where they discuss the Cyruvi threat and the terms of a truce. Nereus shows them a holo video of a young human male named Dev Sibwara. In the holo, Dev tells the Bakurans to rejoice. The Cyrook have arrived to offer the galaxy exaltation, to free their lives from pain and suffering. Through a process called entechment, the Cyrook can release a being's consciousness from their bodies and place them in their droids. That's it, Luke thinks. That's what I felt from the Cyruvi fighters. Dev is clearly brainwashed. Luke and Leia learn that the Cyrook use him to keep their prisoners calm during the entechment process. After the meeting at the Bakuran Senate, Nereus invites the rebel delegation to a dinner. They're introduced to Commander Thanis, Prime Minister Yorg Kaptisen, Senator Orne Belden, and the Prime Minister's niece, Garyelle Kaptisen, herself a new Bakuran senator who has just recently returned to the planet from government training on Coruscant. Luke is immediately attracted to Garyelle, but the young senator is noticeably uncomfortable talking to him. When Luke asks Garyelle about herself, she tells him that she has religious objections to the Jedi Order. Garyelle follows the cosmic balance and believes that for beings to wield immense power, like the Jedi, means that other beings in the galaxy must suffer. Garyelle's words stun Luke, who has never heard anything like this from Obi-Wan Kenobi or Yoda. He tries to ask Garyelle more about the cosmic balance, but before he can, Leia and Governor Nereus begin debating the rebel presence at Bakura with Prime Minister Kaptisen and Senator Belden. Leia learns that Bakura only joined the Empire 3 years prior, and many of the population has mixed feelings about Imperial rule. Nereus says he appreciates the help with the Cyrook, but when Leia informs him of the Emperor's death and the destruction of the second Death Star, Nereus says he will not tolerate her lies and Alliance propaganda. The debate grows heated when an Imperial aide interrupts the dinner, confirming Emperor Palpatine's death. Following the news, Nereus agrees to a truce. The Imperials will share information about the Cyrook and their forces on Bakura in exchange for aid from the Rebel Alliance. As the Cyrook plan their next move, Dev Sibwara is conflicted. During the battle, Dev sensed the presence of a powerful Force user, and he's confused as to whether or not to tell his masters. Normally, Dev is content to do his master's bidding, keeping the human prisoners calm as they're strapped to the entechment tables. Dev learned some of the basics about the Force from his mother. She was killed when the Cyrook attacked their home world. As the aliens were entetching prisoners captured during that raid, the Cyrook discovered Dev's Force abilities. Instead of entetching him, the Cyrook chose to brainwash Dev, and they use him during the entechment process. But touching the Force user snaps Dev out of his indoctrination. However, the Cyrook can sense a change in Dev. They force him through the brainwashing routine again, where he tells them about the Force user he sensed. The news intrigues the Cyrook, who think a more powerful Force user could be used to enslave their adversaries at a distance, instead of the need to capture them. The Cyrook use Dev to record another holo and send it to Governor Nereus. "Turn over the Force user," Dev says, and the Cyrook will leave Bakura alone. Nereus agrees to turn Luke over to the aliens, but before he does, the governor infects Luke with a deadly parasite, hoping it will kill him before the Cyrook can use Luke in their entechment procedure. Nereus also hopes that Luke will infect the Cyrook and end the threat to Bakura. Meanwhile, Luke meets with Garyelle at Senator Belden's house. Garyelle introduces Luke to Belden's wife, Epi, whose mental faculties have been diminished. Luke takes Eppy's hand and uses the Force to probe her mind. He discovers that Eppy's issues aren't natural. Someone has done this to her. Luke uses the Force to touch Eppy's consciousness and shows her how to overcome her injuries and heal her mind herself. Elsewhere, Leia secretly meets with the Prime Minister and Senator Belden. The three talk about what it would take for Bakura to throw out the Empire and join the Rebel Alliance. But Governor Nereus had Leia followed. He arrests the three conspirators for sedition and sends them to prison. Luke and Gariel are attacked by the Cyrook at a restaurant. The aliens try to shoot Gariel with an electrical paddle blaster. Luke jumps in to protect her, but he's shot from behind and falls unconscious. Touching Luke and the Force, Dev breaks through his brainwashing. As they return to the Cyrubi flagship, Dev wonders if he can save Luke. If he can, great. Luke can help him escape from the Cyrook. If not, the only thing Dev thinks to do is to deprive the Cyrook of their prize, and that means killing the Jedi. As the aliens take Luke back to their flagship, a resistance force launches attacks on Imperial forces across Bakura's capital city. Gariel is stunned to find that Eppy Belden is leading the resistance. Eppy tells her niece that Luke showed her how to heal herself. She also tells Gariel to reassess her views on Luke and the Jedi Order, because it's obvious Luke is interested in Gariel. And, Eppy says, it's obvious that Gariel is interested in him. On the Cyrubi flagship, the aliens begin to strap Luke to the attachment table. Dev leaps on the table and tries to waken Luke, but the Jedi remains still. The Cyrook scramble to pull Dev off the table when suddenly Luke uses the Force to shut off the lights in the room. Quickly, he frees himself and jumps down off the table with Dev. Luke calls his lightsaber from one of the Cyrook and begins slashing through the attachment equipment. The aliens fire their paddle blasters at Luke and Dev. Luke blocks most of the blasts, but Dev takes a shot and is mortally wounded. Luke fights his way to the bridge, forcing the remaining Cyrook to flee to their escape pods. With the loss of the flagship, the remaining Cyrook ships call a retreat and jump to hyperspace. As soon as the Cyrook leave, Governor Nereus orders Commander Thanos to attack the Alliance ships. The Imperials start destroying the rebels until Luke, having used the Force to remove the parasites from his lungs, takes control of the Cyrubi cruiser and attacks. The move distracts the Imperials, allowing the rebel forces to escape. Luke calls on Commander Thanos to order his Imperial forces to stand down. Thanos does, ordering a ceasefire. Down on the planet, Han frees Leia from prison. The Bakuran resistance overthrows Governor Nereus, and Commander Thanos surrenders the Imperial garrison. Prime Minister Yorg Kaptisen tells Leia that Bakura will join the Rebel Alliance. Leia is encouraged, but she tells the Prime Minister the Alliance will only accept Bakura if the population votes on it. Our story ends with Luke and Gariel saying their goodbyes. Luke needs to continue to grow as a Jedi to rebuild the Order, and Gariel needs to stay on Bakura, as her responsibilities lie with her people. Time for a break. When we return, I'll talk more about the Truce of Bakura. This was the fourth time I've read this book, and the first time in about 20 years. Have my opinions changed at all? Find out after the break. I'm Aaron Motes. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Star Wars Legends Lounge. Thank you for listening to the Star Wars Legends Lounge, where we celebrate the books from Star Wars Legends. But let me take a moment and recommend a book from Star Wars canon. Aftermath is the beginning of the story following the Battle of Endor. The Empire's in disarray. Now its remaining leaders meet on a distant world to plan a counterattack. How will the Rebellion handle the lingering Imperial threat while trying to start a new republic? That's Aftermath by Chuck Wendig, the first book in the Aftermath trilogy. Welcome back to the Star Wars Legends Lounge, the show that celebrates the books from Star Wars Legends. I'm Aaron Motes, and today I'm talking about The Truce Epicura by Kathy Tyers, a story of alien invasion and uncomfortable cooperation. So overall, this was the fourth time I had read this book, and like I said prior to the break, the first time in about 20 years. I read it when it first was released in 1993, and two more times in the 90s when there weren't a whole lot of Star Wars books, but Star Wars Publishing had started churning out a decent amount of content. I think the last time I read this book was just after finishing the New Jedi Order series around 2002, maybe 2003. One of the things about The Truce of Bakura is it's very Star Trek-y. A lot of the themes, a lot of the plot points in this book, you would expect in a Star Trek novel, or just a couple episodes of any one of the Star Trek series, either the original series or especially the Next Generation. It's got some very hard science fiction elements to it. The Cyrook, this reptilian alien force that's coming from a hidden part of the galaxy, somewhere in the unknown regions or wild space, and they show up. The fact that the rebels and the Empire have to form an alliance immediately following the rebels' victory at Endor. For the most part, Star Wars is not hard science fiction to me. It's light science fiction. It's more science fantasy. This story has a lot of hard science fiction elements to it. One of those things is the fact that the Cyrook supposedly cannot touch the Force. That seems to go contrary to what George Lucas has said, that the Force is in everyone. It goes contrary to what Yoda told Luke in The Empire Strikes Back, that the Force is an energy field made by all living things. I think that's a reason why some Legends fans are not big fans of this book. I remember back in the early 90s when this book came out, there was a lot of excitement following the original Thrawn trilogy. Most people that read those books liked them. There were a few that didn't, and that's fine. But most people that read those books really liked the original Thrawn trilogy, and they were excited to see where Star Wars Publishing was going to go from there. One of the stories, of course, that people were wondering was, how did we get from the Battle of Endor to 5 years later when the rebellion was just forming the New Republic government at Coruscant? They had taken Coruscant. How did we get there? Well, the first story that came out following the original Thrawn trilogy was this story, The Truce of Bakura. And I guess it didn't meet many people's expectations, or it wasn't the type of story they were looking for immediately following the events of Return of the Jedi. I had some of those same opinions that a lot of people in 1993, 1994 had about The Truce of Bakura. That this book, on some level, did not feel like Star Wars. Say what you will about Timothy Zahn's original Thrawn trilogy, whether you liked it or you didn't, I think that feels like Star Wars. And there are parts of The Truce of Bakura that don't feel like Star Wars to me. And that's the opinion I had for over a decade. Now, this is the first time I've read this book since 2002, 2003, sometime around there. I'm 20 years older. I'm now 44. Have my opinions on this book changed? Some of them have. Some of them haven't. In my opinion, this book still has many elements that don't feel like Star Wars. It is a very Star Trek story. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I don't want to speak for the author, Kathy Tyers, but I think what she was going for was a story that showed the blueprint, that showed the roadmap of how the galaxy was going to try to heal itself as the events of the Galactic Civil War were winding down. Now, we know the Imperial Remnant wasn't completely defeated. In the Legends timeline, it's basically defeated after Thrawn's death at the end of the Thrawn trilogy. Yes, the Imperial Remnant continued on for another 15 years in the Legends timeline, but the Imperial threat overall was basically finished at the end of the Thrawn trilogy. At this point in the timeline, it's only been days since the second Death Star has been destroyed. Days since the Emperor and Darth Vader have died. Many parts of the galaxy don't even know this. The planet Bakura, at the edge of Imperial space, does not know what has happened. Governor Nereus does not believe what Leia and Luke try to tell him about what happened at Endor. And it's not until that news is confirmed through Imperial channels that he finally offers a truce in hostilities with the Rebellion in exchange for help defending the planet against the Syrook. I don't know if I like the story any more than when it first came out or the first few times I read it, but I will say I appreciate the story more. I appreciate what Kathy Tyers was trying to do, laying this roadmap with how the Rebel Alliance and the Imperial Remnant were going to interact moving forward. For the most part, I don't think that ends up happening in Legends until much later, until after the events of the Black Fleet crisis. But some of the things that Kathy Tyers tried to put in this novel are there 15, 16, 17 years after the events of this book. So, yes, I would say I appreciate this story more than I did the first few times I read it. Now, I don't want to be negative. I don't really think I have been negative, but I don't want to be negative. I do want to talk about, let me at least talk about the things I really did like in this story. I like the character of Dev Sibwara. It's a tragic character. It's a character that when Luke touches his mind, thinks this could be the first of the next generation of Jedi. Yoda told me to pass on what I have learned. Right now, all I have is Leia, my sister, but she's busy with Rebel Alliance leadership, with trying to form a new galactic government. Dev could be my first apprentice. In the parts of the story where we see into Dev's mind, he loves the Syrook, but they treat him terribly. They've completely brainwashed him into believing that human beings are less, that all alien species in the galaxy are less. We learn that Dev has to continually go through these brainwashing renewals every 4 or 5 months because they eventually wear off, and he sees or comes to understand what the Syrook are using him for. His character is probably my favorite part of this book. The other part that I really do like, and I don't think I appreciated this nearly as much the first few times I read it, is the conflict between Luke and Gariel. A lot of people don't like Gariel as a love interest for Luke. Most people prefer Mara Jade in the Legends timeline as Luke's love interest. I will say I don't think any of the three major love interests in Legends are great, in my opinion. I guess I'm one of the few that don't think that Luke and Mara have great chemistry together. I don't think Luke and Callista really have any chemistry together. Now, we haven't gotten to Callista yet, but she's probably the second major love interest for Luke in the Legends timeline. She does have 3 books for which the two of them try to form a relationship. I would have liked to have seen a little more between Luke and Gariel, because I do think there was a tiny bit there. I'm not going to say they had great chemistry, because they didn't. I mean, they only interact 2 or 3 times in this book, and each time is pretty short. But I would like to have seen something going forward. I thought Gariel's religious views were interesting in the fact that it was something that Luke and we, the audience, had never been exposed to. That people in the galaxy could simply not like Jedi on moral grounds. So I think those are the 2 biggest things that I took from this book. The character of Dev Sibwara, his tragic figure, and the conflict, I won't say moral conflict, but more the intellectual conflict between Gariel Captison and Luke Skywalker. And just personally, I do think it would have been cool to see the two of them together more in this time period. If you think I'm way out of left field saying that, email me, send me a tweet on the show's page. I know everyone likes Mara Jade. I like Mara Jade. I just disagree with a lot of people that think that she and Luke had great chemistry prior to later in the Legends timeline, where they do end up together. But that's just my opinion. Now, it's time to wrap up. But before we do, someone has sent in some more Star Wars character groupings. Waylon must be going through the podcast catalog and is trying to catch up with some of the lists we were doing at the end of last year. But he sent in 3 different favorite character groupings. His favorite Starfighter Squadron, his dive ball team, and his Thanksgiving dinner party. So, let's begin with Waylon's Starfighter Squadron, which he named Star Squadron. Squadron Commander, 1 Flight Leader, Star 1, is Karth Onassi from the Old Republic Naval Starfighter Corps. Star 2 is Corrin Horn. Star 3, Gavin Darklighter. Star 4, Biggs Darklighter. The cousins are wingmates. That's nice. Star 5, 2 Flight Leader, is Luke Skywalker. Star 6, Han Solo. Star 7, Dash Rendar. And Star 8, Mara Jade. Interesting, Waylon, that you have Han Solo and Dash Rendar in the same flight. I'm sure there will be no conflict there whatsoever. Star 9 is Kyle Katarn, and he's the leader of 3 Flight. Star 10 is Clone Force 99. The question, is it all of Clone Force 99? Are they flying the Marauder? Or is it just Tech? Is it just Hunter? Regardless, Clone Force 99 is Star 10. Star 11 is Hera Syndulla, and Star 12 is Captain Rex. Excellent squadron there, Waylon. Now, to your dive ball team. Your force user is Starkiller himself, Galen Merrick. Non-force user is Omega from the Bad Batch. Do we really know if she's a non-force user? I have some theories about that, but whatever. Droid, T3-M4 from the Knights of the Old Republic. Pilot is Karth Onassi again. Waylon must be a big fan. And the ship is the Ebon Hawk, also from Knights of the Old Republic. Again, great list. Now, let's check out who's bringing a dish to Waylon's Thanksgiving potluck dinner. Chewbacca is bringing the turkey. The Mandalorian himself, Din Djarin, is on the hook for stuffing and rolls. Han Solo is bringing the cranberry sauce. The Bad Batch are on dessert duty. I can see we're going to have a lot of Mantel mix coming for dessert. And then finally, Waylon is inviting Hondo Onaka to his Thanksgiving to serve as the target for target practice, because Waylon says he does not like the character of Hondo. Well, that's kind of a dark Thanksgiving, but thank you for the list, Waylon. And listener, if you have a favorite character grouping, come on and send it in. Anything goes. Who's your favorite Starfighter squadron? Who you bring into a dinner party? Your pod racer teams? Diplomatic assembly? What about Valentine's Day coming up? Who's going to plan a great date night? And why are the correct answers Lando Calrissian and Garza Fwip? Oh my goodness. This just came to me. Can you imagine a date with either Lando or Garza Fwip? Can you imagine them dating each other? If any of you listeners, okay, listen to me right now. If any of you listeners like writing steamy fan fiction, write that story. Lando Calrissian and Garza Fwip on a date. And please email it to me. I want to read that right now. That being said, it's now time to wrap up the show. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Star Wars Legends Lounge. If you have a question or comment for the show, send me an email at swlegendslounge@gmail.com or send me a tweet at legendslounge1. Now, coming up on the next episode, it's Luke Skywalker and the Shadows of Mindor by Matthew Stover, a story that may or may not have actually happened in the Legends timeline. It's a pretty interesting book. It'll be the second time I've read it. Join me again on February 3rd. Once again, thank you so much for listening to the Star Wars Legends Lounge. I'm Aaron Motes. May the Force be with you. And remember, there's always a bit of truth in legends.